Hello, and welcome to Talking About Tumors with Ryan and Ryan. I'm Ryan Olsett.
And I'm Ryan Quinn.
And we're moving on into a new topic today. We're talking about melanoma, specifically in the localized and node-positive setting.
So melanoma is a difficult disease that has seen a lot of changes recently that are pretty exciting. So we're excited to talk about this topic. Hope everyone is enjoying this nice weather. It's a little bit too hot for me, 85 degrees in April, but it's giving us a nice taste of summer.
Now, as an upfront disclosure, melanoma is a complicated disease, and although with the advances in immune therapy, treatment is moving more into the community as of late. Historically, this was an academic-centered treated disease, and in localized settings, still often because it's a multidisciplinary approach, utilizing surgeons who are familiar with this disease and providers who've been treating melanoma for many years. This is often where this may be managed at. In my current location, I'm not treating a whole lot of melanoma. I did have the opportunity to see some during my fellowship training, so this discussion is going to be more around what we've seen in training and what we've read rather than what I'm doing day-to-day now.
The good news is that the majority of melanoma is diagnosed in the early stage. About 85% is diagnosed in the localized setting, with about 8% with regional nodal metastasis, and only really 4% present with metastatic disease.
It does make up a small fraction of all skin cancers, actually less than 5%, but it makes up the vast majority of dermatologic cancer mortality, making more than 70% of mortality-related skin cancers.
Now, getting into the risk factors, there are many based on geography, ethnicity. So as we know, Northern Europeans, Australia, New Zealand has a particularly high rate of melanoma. White, non-Hispanic patients, exposure to UV light, multiple sunburns, things like immunosuppression, such as from malignancy, HIV, solid organ transplant, red hair, light eyes is a classic risk factor.
Although the sun exposure is definitely involved, this disease can start to peak in incidence from the age of as early as 30 up to the age of 70. So there's likely also some inborn predispositions in certain patients. It does affect males more often than women, with a 2-to-1 ratio of diagnosis. There are many different classifications of melanoma. This is most commonly done by the location of origin, so the vast majority being cutaneous, making up 91% of invasive melanomas. There's a superficial spreading variant, uveal melanoma, nodular melanoma, which pertains to the worst prognosis, a mucosal melanoma, and acralentiginous melanoma, which can involve the palms and nail beds. These do differ individually in their molecular properties and overall behavior.
So when looking at the molecular phenotype of melanoma, the most common mutation that we see is the BRAF mutation, which occurs in about 50% of patients.
There's two BRAF mutations that are most commonly associated, V600E, which is a valine to gluconate transformation, and a V600K mutation.
Yes, and the second most common is the NRAS mutation, which is in about 20% of patients. The mutations tend to be mutually exclusive, so if you have a BRAF mutation, you probably don't have an NRAS mutation. And the BRAF mutation particularly does have implications for treatment, so it is a good idea to check this when you get the biopsy result.
Yeah.
Now, talking about screening, different societies and different countries all have kind of different guidelines on this. In the United States, the USPSTF actually doesn't have a strong recommendation for or against screening. There have been some studies looking at this, and it's really not cost-effective to screen the entire population. It's really much more cost-effective to look at high-risk groups, such as older white males, people with many different congenital nevi, family history of melanoma. Those are the groups that a lot of societies will target for screening, such as Australia and Canada.
If we do a broad brush screening, we're going to find a lot more melanomas, but these are going to be a lot of stage zero, early stage one. And the question is, how many of these would have actually transformed into a melanoma? And looking at the increased screening and diagnosis, at least in the United States, has not led to an increased, to a reduction in melanoma-related mortality, which is ultimately our goal with any screening process.
So getting into staging, melanoma does use the traditional TNM staging system, and the prognosis does vary quite a lot by stage, with a 5-year overall survival of only 25% in stage 4 and about 99% in stage 1.
There's also a component of the presence or absence of LDH elevation that becomes relevant in stage 4 disease. The T staging is specifically due to the depth of invasion, and this is known as the Breslow depth, measured in millimeters. So T1 is everything up to 1 millimeter, T2 is 1.1 to 2 millimeters, T3 is 2.1 to 4 millimeters, and greater than 4 millimeters would be a T4 lesion. For each T stage, there's also an A and B component, depending on the presence or absence of ulceration at the surface of the lesion. So it's very important when you get a biopsy that you ensure that the biopsy gets to the base of the tumor. If there's positive inferior margins, then you're going to need a deeper biopsy in order to, you know, get appropriate staging workup. The end staging is based upon the presence of regional or distant lymph nodes, N1 being one lymph node present, N2 being 2 to 3 lymph nodes present, and then N3 being greater than 4 lymph nodes present. There is also a N2C designation, which is known as tumor in transit. So this is when you do the biopsy and a separate lesion is noticed adjacent to the melanoma, deep to the epidermis, so it's not a primary tumor. It's likely related to the origin, but not involving a lymph node. And this does pertain to a poor prognosis and is what's called N2C, which is a high-yield topic.
It's also important to note that stage 3 disease is usually node-positive disease. However, in a lot of the trials, patients with lymph node involvement that is less than 1 millimeter on the biopsy specimen, often these patients were not included in some of the adjuvant trials that we're going to be talking about. So if it's stage 3 but less than 1 millimeter, this definitely has a better prognosis than the other stage 3 patients.
Yeah, I think a stage 3 tumor, so a tumor with a stage 3A tumor, so a tumor with less than 2 millimeters of invasion, no ulceration, and less than 1 millimeter lymph node involvement has a 5-year disease-free survival of greater than 90%. So very favorable prognosis when you that you've removed everything when you do the surgery for these cancers.
Yes, you'll even see that patients with a stage 2B and 2C have worse prognosis than these patients that have stage 3A disease.
After the staging is complete, the question is whether or not there's a role for doing evaluation for distant disease. In general, for any melanoma that's greater than stage 2B, you're going to be doing imaging for distant disease, which would be with a PET if you have access to it. And this is a PET specifically from head to toe, different than our eyes to thighs PET that you may be doing for tumors that are more visceral, more likely to spread to visceral lesions, such as with lung cancer.
Yeah, with those, we typically order the base of skull to mid-thigh, whereas this would be whole body.
And if you don't have access to a PET scan, you would then do a CT chest, abdomen, pelvis, a bony imaging, plus or minus MRI of the brain.
Now, another important concept in the treatment of localized melanoma is sentinel lymph node mapping and sentinel lymph node biopsy. This is typically done for anybody with greater than a stage 1A.
So sentinel lymph node mapping is not unlike what we discussed previously in breast cancer with an extra layer to it. So if you remember with breast cancer, they would inject dye either directly into the tumor or near to the tumor. They would then surgically resect the lesions that took up the blue ink. In the case of melanoma, there's an added layer of complexity because based upon where the melanoma is, there may be variable lymph node drainage. A lymph node, a melanoma that starts in the leg is going to go to the inguinal region. A melanoma that originates on the back could go to either axillary location as well as others. So in order to help limit the risk of morbidity, a dual tracer approach is used. So they'll inject both the blue ink as well as a radioactive tracer. And then using essentially a fancy Geiger counter, they'll hover this around the lymph node basins where they think the drainage may occur. If they're detecting radioactive uptake, they will then dissect at that area and remove the blue inked lymph nodes. And that's a very medical oncology explanation of how a complex procedure is done by our surgical oncologists.
There have been two kind of landmark studies looking at the benefit of the sentinel lymph node biopsy along with the lymph node dissection for positive nodes. The first one was the MSLT1 trial, which looked at, you know, does the sentinel lymph node biopsy actually help and improve outcomes? So this was in patients that had no clinically involved lymph nodes, and half of the patients underwent a sentinel lymph node biopsy with clinical lymph node dissection if the nodes were positive, and the other half did not have a sentinel lymph node biopsy and just had observation. There was actually no difference in the overall melanoma survival. There was an increase in the disease-free survival. So it currently is standard to do the sentinel lymph node biopsy, although it might just be giving us prognostic information rather than actual survival benefit. The second study was the MSLT-2 trial, which looked at the actual role of the lymph node dissection itself. This study took patients that had no clinically involved lymph nodes, and everybody got sentinel lymph node mapping. If the nodes were positive, this was the group that they randomized. Half of them got an immediate lymph node dissection, and the other half got a just surveillance ultrasounds with no lymph node dissection. And again, this also showed no benefit in the immediate lymph node dissection. Patients did just as well if they had surveillance ultrasound rather than lymph node dissection, because as we know, lymph node dissections can have more morbidity, such as lymphedema, as well as neuropathy. So because of this study, the immediate lymph node dissection is usually not performed in patients with positive nodes.
Adjuvant and neoadjuvant therapy is quickly gaining a foothold and expanding in this setting. There's some older data that used interferon for high-risk stage 3B or greater melanomas. However, that's quickly been replaced as we now have more effective, less toxic options available with the immune therapy inhibitors and BRAF combination regimens. In general, still our best benefit's going to be with those stage 3B to 3D tumors, as well as the stage 3A tumors where lymph node involvement is greater than 1 millimeter. It's worth mentioning right now, and we'll get into it in more detail next discussion, but stage 4, this is one of those tumors where stage 4 disease with one or two metastatic deposits can be managed with mastectomies. Stage 3 tumors do have a recurrence risk of greater than 50%, so this is a very morbid disease, even if it is in a curable state. And although, unfortunately, the adjuvant studies to date have not shown improvements in overall survival, there is a significant recurrence-free survival that may prevent morbidity. We're hopeful that we'll be seeing some increased overall survival benefit as follow-up extends.
Right now, both pembrolizumab and nivolumab are approved in the adjuvant setting. Both of them are given for a one-year duration after surgery. There have been studies looking at adjuvant ipilimumab and nivolumab because, as we know, the combination does seem to work well in the metastatic setting, which we'll get to. However, this was a very toxic regimen, so right now we do not use this in the adjuvant setting.
Yeah, there's a big difference to expected overall survival of 15 to 20% and increasing that up to an overall survival of 50%, whereas in the adjuvant setting, we're really looking at absolute improvements of disease-free survival of 15% and no survival benefit. And the level of toxicity with a doublet immune therapy does not seem to outweigh the efficacy that we've seen so far.
Adjuvant ipilimumab was used on its own and was actually the first checkpoint inhibitor to be studied. However, pembrolizumab and nivolumab were both shown to be more effective in clinical trials. So right now, pembrolizumab and nivolumab are the preferred agents.
Now, there's a direct comparison trial of nivolumab versus ipilimumab. There's also evidence in using the combination of dabrafenib and trametinib, a BRAF and MEK inhibitor, in BRAF-positive melanoma. We'll get to that in a moment, but that has also had similar benefits as the other drugs.
So we'll get into this again in a minute, but if your patient has a BRAF V600E or V600K mutation, you do have the option of using either dabrafenib, trametinib, or pembrolizumab or nivolumab. These have never been directly compared head-to-head, so there's really no clear answer as to which is superior. So really, right now, the choice is kind of made based on toxicity profile and patient preference.
Now, so as of 2022-2023, the approach appears to be moving more to a neoadjuvant approach for stage 3 melanomas with clinically positive lymph nodes. So these are lymph nodes that are either positive on clinical exam or on your staging imaging. Unlike with adjuvant chemotherapy, where after the surgery, our goal is to essentially mop up the micrometastatic disease that remains elsewhere, immunotherapy seems to work best by activating the immune system to a nidus that was previously not recognized. If you recall, we had discussed last discussion around the role of tumor-invading lymphocytes and these being potentially activated to attack the localized tumor as well as to go elsewhere and target the metastatic deposits. Now, with using immune therapy in the adjuvant setting, there really isn't that nidus anymore. We really just have the micrometastatic disease, and we're uncertain how many tumor-invading lymphocytes are being activated. With that in mind, a phase 2 trial was run by the Southwest Oncology Group. This was a randomized trial where patients with stage 3B or greater, including stage 4 resectable melanomas, were randomized 1-to-1 to either have 3 cycles of pembrolizumab, followed by surgery, followed by pembrolizumab to complete a total year of course, versus surgery up front, followed by a year of pembrolizumab. Primary endpoint for this trial was event-free survival. A secondary endpoint was overall survival. In this trial, they had just over 300 patients, relatively balanced between groups. Only 9% were stage 4, so this is really a stage 3 trial. The vast majority of these were cutaneous at 93%, which is consistent with the population data, and about a quarter were BRAF, so a little bit less than what you would expect to see for BRAF-positive melanoma. And at a medium 15-month follow-up, they did show a significant improvement in event-free survival at 2 years of 72 versus 50%. There were 12 patients who progressed during the neoadjuvant run-up in pembrolizumab and were unable to have surgery. And there was at least one patient who had significant toxic effects and was unable to move to surgery. Also of note, there was a patient who had complete clinical response and refused surgery, and to date of the publication has still not had recurrence. Grade 3 toxicities in the neoadjuvant run-up were actually a bit less than what we've seen with some of the other immune therapy trials. Only 7% developed any, and this may be as a result of better surveillance or maybe just the shorter treatment course, because in the adjuvant setting it was 12 versus 14% relatively balanced level of toxicity. This is certainly a significant improvement in risk of recurrence-free survival at 2 years. We'll need longer follow-up to see whether or not this is sustained. And a lot of questions have arisen from this trial, such as, do we really need the adjuvant component if we get complete response? I think another question that's been arising and likely will be evaluated at some point is in patients who did not get complete response and are BRAF positive, would they benefit more by switching to a BRAF agent in the adjuvant setting? The question also is, for patients who are stage 4, are they really benefiting as much? We didn't get a lot of data as a small population in this trial, but there were a few patients who progressed early. And if they progress early and it's localized, you can sometimes still salvage that surgery. But if they progress early and metastatic, you may not detect this, and it could lead to a catastrophic event, such as can be seen with CNS deposits.
Yeah, so certainly exciting data. There has been a study looking at neoadjuvant nivolumab, ipilimumab. This is a more toxic regimen. So there have been trials looking at finding the optimal dosing prior to surgery. But it has been shown that 2 cycles of ipilimumab, nivolumab prior to surgery can produce responses. However, so far there's no data yet on event-free survival. I believe these trials are ongoing, so something to stay tuned for. So going back to BRAF-mutated tumors, so the combination of dabrafenib and trametinib has been looked at also for 1 year duration after surgery in the adjuvant setting. This was looked at in the COMBI-AD trial and looked at dabrafenib, trametinib versus placebo. It did have an increased recurrence-free survival at 5 years, 52% versus 36%. The overall survival data is still immature, but there was a trend towards overall survival at 3 years, 86% versus 77%. However, this has not reached statistical significance.
Although the mutation we're targeting here is the BRAF mutation, single agent BRAF inhibitors have been shown not to be effective in melanoma. This is analogous to our discussions around colon cancer, where the BRAF mutation needs also an EGFR inhibitor. In the case of melanoma, secondary pathways lead to a MEK overactivation, so we will often treat these with a combination of BRAF and MEK inhibitors. And you'll see in the metastatic setting, we'll be talking about all different combinations of BRAF and MEK inhibitors. In both the metastatic and adjuvant space, there's been trials looking at individual BRAF inhibitors, and these have been negative, specifically vemurafenib in the melanoma adjuvant space. There was also a follow-up publication with an average of 5 years follow-up. This did show ongoing improvements in disease-free survival, although they did not comment on overall survival in the secondary publication, stating that the pre-specified margin of benefit was not met. So we'll wait the final overall survival data probably in the next couple of years. Toxicities of this, by far and away, the most common toxicity with this combination is fever. And it's a pretty significant fever that may start as early as the first couple of days on treatment. It's to such an extent that places that are commonly treating this will often have protocols for fevers because it's less likely you're dealing with an infection and someone who has a high-grade fever and no other signs of a localized infection. Often this will lead to needing to take dose breaks, Tylenol, and possibly dose reductions in order to have the fever resolve. Other also common toxicities that are typically manageable are fatigue, nausea, headache, and diarrhea.
So given the benefit of adjuvant immunotherapy in stage 3 disease, there have been attempts to look at this even in stage 2 disease. There have been 2 trials, one looking at pembrolizumab and one looking at nivolumab in stage 2B and 2C disease.
This would be a tumor that's either greater than 4 millimeters or greater than 2 millimeters with ulceration.
So the first study to look at this was looking at adjuvant pembrolizumab for 1 year after surgery in patients with stage 2B and 2C disease. And this showed benefits in recurrence-free survival at 2 years. So at average follow-up, 27 months, the two-year recurrence-free survival was 81% versus 73%, with a distant recurrence-free survival of 88% versus 82%. Notably, there were a significant amount of toxicities. 17% of patients had hypothyroidism. 16% of patients had grade 3 toxicities. Most common were rash. Some patients had colitis, hepatitis. Many patients had endocrine toxicities such as adrenal insufficiency, hypothyroidism, hyperthyroidism, and hypophysitis. So far, there's no overall survival benefit in these studies, as in the studies looking at stage 3 disease.
The nivolumab trial has not yet been published. It's been presented in abstract form, but it does look like the disease-free survival is somewhat similar.
Yeah, so they presented data median follow-up of 16 months. The one-year recurrence-free survival is 89% versus 79%, with one-year distant recurrence of 92% versus 87%.
Pretty immature trials, and certainly tumors without the same extent of recurrence as with stage 3. I mean, we're talking about overall recurrence of about 25%, and we're improving that by an absolute benefit of 9%. So that may be important. I mean, certainly for distant disease, that can be pretty catastrophic. You know, CNS lesions can arise. Melanoma is known to spread to almost any location, and you can have bowel obstructions, significant pain from bony lesions that fracture. However, that when we're looking at a total of 6% distant metastasis-free survival, and this has to really be counterbalanced by that toxicity. And things like hypophysitis, type 1 diabetes, hypothyroid, those are often permanent toxicities. And patients can die from some of these toxicities if they're severe enough, such as myocarditis. So there certainly are going to be patients who likely will benefit from this and want this therapy. And I think you have to be comfortable with discussing the level of risk, the anticipated benefit, and be able to have that open conversation with your patients so they can make a decision that would suit their what's important to them.
Yeah, definitely a good point. Another thing to mention in the adjuvant space, with many other cancers, we talk about adjuvant radiation. Just worth mentioning, in melanoma, this has really not shown any benefit with recurrence-free survival or overall survival. So this is not standard to offer adjuvant radiation for these patients.
Lastly, just on the topic of surveillance, if you recall from our conversations around colon cancer and breast cancer, there's quite evidence-based and rigorous surveillance protocols. These vary by country, but often are at least have some reason behind them. Melanoma is tricky, partially because it is a rare disease. There's not as many people to study. And also, only recently have we had anything to offer to people with metastatic disease other than mastectomies and interferon. So it's an evolving area, and there really does not appear to be a standard approach, and it's very variable between countries. Some countries, such as the United States, stress value of doing a skin exam on these patients in recurrence. Other countries, such as some in Europe, actually use a serological marker called S100. In general, the assumption is that some form of follow-up should be done for the first 5 years in node-positive disease, any disease that's greater than stage 2B. This is based upon the recurrence risk being highest in the first 5 years. It may also involve an addition of imaging, such as in the U.S., the NCCN recommends consideration of a CT chest, abdomen, and pelvis in patients with stage 2B to 4 every 3 to 12 months for 2 years. And every 6 to 12 months for 3 years afterwards. Very wide intervals there on the recommendations. ESMO, the European Society of Medical Oncology, actually just states, refer to your local country's recommendations, but in general recommends to consider surveillance in greater than 2 millimeters or lymph node positive. Some centers or countries may also include ultrasound of the lymph node basin that was resected for local recurrence in that area.
So I know that was a lot. Hopefully we didn't put everybody to sleep and you're still with us, but just to go over some of the bottom lines, melanoma is a kind of rapidly changing field, which is pretty exciting, and we're seeing a lot more of this being treated in the community setting.
It's a rare disease, and certainly the evidence is changing quickly, so you know, when you do come across these in your practice, brush up with what's most recently come out, and familiarize with your local center's expertise.
Wide local excision is the standard treatment for all patients with localized disease, with sentinel lymph node mapping and biopsy for patients with greater than stage 1A disease.
In tumors with clinically palpable lymph nodes or radiographic apparent lymph nodes, there is certainly good evidence to support neoadjuvant therapy with pembrolizumab given for 3 cycles prior to surgery and subsequently to complete 1 year of treatment. This is based upon phase 2 data without survival yet, so it's an evolving area. Should someone get surgery up front or have stage 2 disease and get surgery up front, there's evidence both for BRAF inhibitors or monotherapy with immunotherapy such as pembrolizumab or nivolumab that have shown relatively in stage 3 disease, an absolute benefit of 15% on disease-free survival, with the lesser benefit seen in the stage 2B and 2C tumors. The follow-up for these trials are still ongoing, and we may see some overall survival emerge. Of course, this will be muddied by the fact that these patients often will be getting these highly effective therapies in the metastatic setting. So the exact sequencing of this and approach is certainly an evolving area. And if you have access to clinical trials in your area, certainly a worthwhile thing to consider.
So on that note, hopefully everyone enjoys the nice weather. Make sure you wear sunscreen and have a good night. Thanks for listening.
Bye for now.
For more information, follow us on Twitter at Talking Tumors, or feel free to email us at talkingabouttumors@gmail.com.
Please rate and review the podcast. We really appreciate it.
And special shout out to our friend John Kim for all of his musical talents.
And he is the composer of the music that you're hearing right now. Talking About Tumors is not medical advice.
For medical advice, please contact your own healthcare provider.
Opinions stated on this podcast are by the Ryan who said it and no one else. We have no financial disclosures, and this is done purely on our own time to the sake of our enjoyment of the field of medical oncology. Thank you for listening, and see you next time.